Hey everybody, it's the Shay Anything Podcast, a special Friday edition. You get two episodes this week. Lucky you. I am just a content machine, just churning out content for the world. Nelson Figueroa joins me. Andy, too good for the second episode of this week. I'm sure our listeners are going to be very upset we're not doing another prediction segment.
He did one?
He did and didn't. But anyway. Very excited to have you here, Nelson. Lots of momentum coming off opening day. I feel like sometimes opening day can come and go, and it's a weird game where the starting pitcher gets rocked, or I don't know. It just ends up not giving you an idea of what the rest of the season could be like. Yesterday felt like you got Jacob DeGrom going out there, shuts the Nats down. Then you got Lugo, you got Familia, you got Diaz, you have Robbie Cano showing you the player he still is. And it gave Mets fans not only the happiness that a win can give them, the Mets give them a win on opening day, it seems like every year, but also just a way to show fans how they could win in 2019.
Yeah, without a doubt, I think you want Jacob DeGrom on the hill that opening day and to let him continue his mastery. We saw that yesterday on full display, and he wasn't even at his best. But the offense only had five hits, but it was enough with Jacob DeGrom, because if you score him one run, the team's able to back him up with the bullpen being solid, the defense being even solid. I think that's something that we would say last year, well, one of the other two elements isn't going to be there. They're not going to play defense, or the bullpen's not going to be able to hold the lead. And they were able to do that yesterday. Is it a recipe for success? If you could do it like that with Jacob right to those three guys and they be perfect, yeah. But I think the good part is that the rest of the offense really didn't get off to a good start, but you know that there's more in the tank there.
I was thinking last night, actually, as we were doing Baseball Night in New York, that Robbie Cano being such a solid Hall of Fame caliber all-around baseball player, even in Yoenis Cespedes' prime as a Met, he was a flashy player, had a great arm, could hit the ball 500 feet, could carry the team for spurts, but wasn't that caliber of all-around player that Robinson Cano is. Has it been since David Wright in his prime that the Mets had this level of player on their team in the everyday roster?
Yeah, I think when you look at Robinson Cano, what he brings to the table, and it's just consistent, but it's consistent excellence.
Yeah.
It's not where it's like, oh, he had a down year, maybe he'll bounce back. You've never heard that about Robinson Cano. I mean, even in half a season last year, it was half the normal numbers that he normally puts up. He's just that consistent. So I think to have someone like that, especially now that David's gone and you need leadership like that, and someone who you can watch and say day in and day out, you know, every single player can say there's a facet of Cano's game that I want to have my game model after. You know, you look at Conforto and the way the approach about going the other way. We know how good Conforto is when he's on hitting the ball the other way, but Cano can do it when the shift is on in the biggest moments. We saw that day one. You know, he talked about that being in the batter's box while Cano was up at bat, just watching his approach of how he's kind of just scouring out the land or scanning the land and saying, listen, I know what I need to do here. I'm not going to be able to hit the ball as hard as I can through six players on the right side. Let me just nice and easy let the ball get to me, and you can say it all to you blue in the face, but it's actually doing it, which is what Conforto should be able to learn from him.
I always have thought it would be so frustrating to have a great spring training and the season starts and just suddenly it goes away. And that happens a lot. And for Robbie Cano, the first test was show up in Port St. Lucie, coming off the year where you were suspended. You're now back in New York. How are you going to play? Played great in spring training. Then he comes up, and between the defensive play, the solo shot off of Scherzer, the second run, which he drove in as well, he was the Mets, other than Jacob DeGrom, yesterday. And that says something to me about the player, because there's – you've talked about this with me, the difference between a Jose Reyes and a Robbie Cano. Like, everything Jose Reyes does is like loud music. It's like, you know, he's sliding head first into third base. He's doing that gun of an arm, sidearm from shortstop deep in the hole. Robbie Cano's the smooth jazz.
Smooth jazz.
And just very cool to see. And I said this on the show last night, too. We spent a lot of time this offseason saying, I'm not worried about years one and two on his contract. What we should have been saying, though, was I'm looking forward to years one and two of his contract, because this is not, and I know he doesn't have a new contract. I'm speaking in terms of his contract with the Mets. This is a guy we should be looking forward to watching on a daily basis. Will it be bad in 5 years? Maybe.
Well, you're talking about the window, right? Everybody keeps talking about the window. Well, the window with the players that you had, and remember, Jay Bruce was the 2 years left in his contract, so you had to worry about Jay Bruce. Could he bounce back, or is that the Bruce that we're going to see from now on? He's always been a 250 hitter. Robbie Cano's been a 300 hitter against lefties and righties. So you're talking about that level of consistency. So with him, it's a different animal. You have Cespedes. You would love to have Cespedes be in this window as well, as much as possible, because then you have that kind of element from right side and left side. And the team is so much deeper now that a Robinson Cano is just that guy that you can't pitch around. There's no lefty that you can bring in that he hasn't faced, even though yesterday he said, oh, yeah, I faced Grace. You know, he's a really good lefty. He had faced him one time in his career before that, and he also got a hit off him. So, kudos to him for, you know, being humble still in this day and age.
Maybe spring training.
He's a veteran. He's a veteran that way where, you know what, it wouldn't matter who was on the mound. If he ever faced him four, or if he faced him a million times, he has an opportunity to get a hit because of his approach, because of his ability to take his heart rate down. That's what he does. He brings his heart.
It's like he takes a beta blocker before every game.
You look at with Jose Reyes, and I loved Jose Reyes, the players. He was about excitement. He was about energy and everything. You to try and keep up with that was so difficult for everyone else on the team. That's what made him stand out. Robinson Cano is the polar opposite of that. He's the guy that you're sitting there going, "What's wrong with him? He's moving in slow motion, but it's poetic." Motion. It's ground balls to him, so fluid, so easy, where other guys are struggling to do it or lay out with the dive and try and do something spectacular. He makes the ordinary look extraordinary because he's so quiet and calm with his body.
To your point about Cespedes, Brody deserves credit for, A, us not talking more about Yoenis Cespedes. We're not missing him right now, given how many depth pieces he added this offseason and how many pieces in general he added. And B, that I didn't watch the Mets yesterday thinking, man, when Lowry comes back, when Frazier comes back, no. Because, you know, you can argue about Todd Frazier's place on this team. Jed Lowry was signed to be a everyday player on this team. And still, given how McNeil looks at third base, given the fact that Guillorme had a fantastic spring, you got Rosario at short. You know, you've got Cano at second and obviously first base. You have two very capable youngsters there right now. You don't miss any of these guys that are on the shelf, and that is why building depth is so worth your time and energy and money.
It was outside the box, right? Everybody wanted Machado or bust. You know, if you're going to show you're going to be a winner, you've got to spend the money. Well, you can spend the money, but you can spread it out.
Yeah.
You can spread it out.
That's
so
what the Mets did.
Yeah, so you're raising the level of the floor. There's not a huge drop-off when you're talking about a high-ceiling team, a playoff-caliber team. Oh, somebody got hurt. Oh, another guy got hurt. And we're talking about two guys that are supposed to be in this lineup almost every day that – you're not really going to miss because there's not a big drop-off. You're actually excited about seeing more of McNeil to see if he can duplicate what he did in the short amount of time he was up last year. I'm actually excited to see what Alonso and Dom Smith can give us on the other side. You know, it's one of those things where not an abundance of riches, because that's what the Yankees always have, right? So we always say that, like, oh, look who they're turning.
Yeah, but they have a young core suddenly, and I don't think the Mets get enough credit for that.
That's exactly true. I think they have like 9 players that are under 28 years old, including, you know, you got Gesellman, who's only 25 in the bullpen. You've got you've got Syndergaard. You've got all these different starting players with Conforto, Nimmo, Rosario. All of a sudden, you're looking out, and it was like, well, it's bleak. The Mets are old.
McNeil, they're not athletic. Pete Alonso, Dom Smith, all these guys are young.
Even saying that this team is not athletic anymore, you can't say that. They've got athletes that they can plug and play all over the field, and it's an exciting brand of baseball, I think.
I know we probably sound like a couple of giddy fans coming off one win, but it's not about yesterday.
No.
It's not about Jacob deGrom not giving up any runs in 6 innings, because that you could have seen coming. It's more just look around at the roster. And that's my point about Lowry and Frazier, because there are a lot of teams and a lot of Mets teams of the past where if you lost 2 starting infielders, you'd be starting the season with a starting infield that you would not be happy with.
Right.
And your point about Machado or bust is a good one, because That, in my opinion, has been what you've seen in past off seasons. Not saying the Mets have ever been that big spender and signed the Manny Machados of the world. But, you know, I always bring up the fact that you used to have one or two guys in that clubhouse in Port St. Lucie. Roger Bernardina a couple years ago was their only outfield option with any big league experience that wasn't expected to make the team. You know, they had four of them. Who was Gregor Blanco, Carlos Gomez?
You have
Keon Broxson, Rajay Davis.
Blanco with two World Series rings. Rajay Davis, who's in the World Series with the Indians. You had Gomez, who at times was one of the best outfielders in the game when healthy, could do it on both sides of the of baseball. And you have all those guys now down in AAA. That is mind-boggling to me. It's also the state of the game at this point, right? Because the 30-plus, 32-plus guys are now having to take these contracts. But it's also about them seeing, you know what? You want to buy into this team right now because of the pitching staff that they have and because of the opportunities that you could have. Because of one injury away, it always seems to happen. Now you could be the guy that goes up there and makes a difference. And so they came into spring training, and they made it interesting because you're looking at these names still. And I don't care if Roger Davis is 38. His body isn't 38. He doesn't play like he's 38. He moves very well. He still is a guy that I could see coming off the bench and stealing bases for you. And he's done it time and time again. The playoff experience that those guys bring to you as well is something you can't overlook. And these guys are right now in AAA. And it's about biding their time until an opportunity comes, but it's also about the next group of guys that are coming up, the other guys that are waiting in the wings in AAA, learning from these guys of how to be big leaguers. It's not just lip service from coaches who played back in the 80s. It's now guys that they watched playing the World Series, and they're in the minor leagues. A lot of that is a humbling experience, but it's also a learning experience for the other guys.
Yeah, I'm starting to realize that when Brody said, I want to eliminate the ifs, I think some of us were hoping that, oh, does that mean he's going to sign the premier free agents? Because that is how you eliminate the ifs. In Brody's mind, I think it was, if we lose Jed Lowry, we have Jeff McNeil. You know, like the floor, like you said, it is not nearly as low as it was the last couple of years. And the Mets should go into every season expecting the worst. Every baseball team should go into every year expecting the worst and hoping for the best.
Yeah, remember the starting shortstop was Wilmer Flores, right, in 2015.
Right.
Now you think about where would he even try to fit on this team? He's not athletic enough. He doesn't do things nearly as well enough.
Batting third for the Diamondbacks.
Loved him and his time here with the Mets, but we saw him on a day-in, day-out basis.
Yeah, he was exposed.
Every ground ball that got hit to him was an adventure, and it was his throwing arm, and then his footwork was never really good. But this guy was the starting shortstop.
Yeah.
Went to the World Series with that. Now you're looking at a team, again, more athletic, more options, more pieces to move around, to mix and match and plug and play. After one game, yeah, it sounds like a great idea. We haven't seen all those elements have to be played out, and it's going to be interesting to see how it works.
There's a lot of ways to be a bad team in Major League Baseball, a lot of ways to have a bad year. The Mets in their history have had a lot of bad seasons, but last year their roster was better than the teams that have had bad seasons in the past. A lot of times you could build a good roster, like I think Sandy did in a lot of ways last year, and it goes wrong. Brody preparing for everything to go wrong was a really smart move for a general manager to make. Before we talk about opening day, how Major League Baseball did it, I know you have thoughts on Jacob DeGrom and his nerves and everything like that. Let's talk about the pitcher quickly, because one of the things we didn't talk about this offseason, now it feels like rightly so, was the if factor with if Jacob DeGrom could carry the momentum of 2018 into 2019. We didn't talk about that because we believe in him so much.
Right.
He goes out there, talks about how nervous he is, doesn't show it. Maybe he showed it early and then got over it, but was there any part of you going into his start on opening day yesterday that thought, new contract, threw a lot of innings last year, coming off his best season and maybe one of the best seasons in big league history, will there be a letdown? Was there any part of you that was worried about that?
I mean, it's going to be difficult to duplicate 1.70 ERA, but what Jacob DeGrom is able to do on the mound every single pitch of every single inning is never give in. That's what I think is so remarkable about him, is that he learned that mindset took another gear last year. I mean, when you go out there and first thing you say is, I want to win the Cy Young, I mean, 98% of the league gets laughed at. You know, you take those top 10 pitchers, and he wasn't in that category yet. We thought, because we got to see him.
We kind of thought he was the underrated guy that we watch a lot. And the rest of baseball doesn't realize
how good he is.
He
wasn't Harvey. He wasn't as flashy as Syndergaard. This was a guy who, you know, was a nice pitcher, and he hasn't won 15 games even. He just got over 200 innings. I said it yesterday. My analogy was, this is like going and running a marathon for the first time, getting over the 200 inning mark, and then the next year going, I'm going to win the New York City Marathon, and doing it. He went out there and just won and beat everybody. Not only that, but changed the way you even think about the Cy Young. It used to be 20-game winner for the Cy Young. He won it with 10. It made you think about what's important to pitching, run prevention. And there's nobody better that I've seen in run prevention that a guy gets on and it doesn't matter. A guy could be at third with nobody out. It doesn't matter. Those next three guys are in trouble. They're going to get the best of Jacob deGrom. It's not that he's in cruise control the whole time, but when his stuff is on, it is cruise control. But when he has to turn it up another notch, he has so many other weapons. And his mental state of, you know what, that guy's not scoring. We've seen it time and time again. We saw it yesterday. And yes, there was a nice double play in there and a misread by a rookie. But that's baseball.
Right.
I take Jacob deGrom and his mental side over Max Scherzer, who made the one mistake trying to outthink somebody and left that one changeup up, and that was the difference in the game.
Yeah, it's like, I'm trying to think of an analogy to what you're saying. It's like a Range Rover is a comfortable drive in the summertime on a clean road, but it's also a comfortable drive in the wintertime with 3 inches of snow. So when Jacob deGrom is great, he's great, right, and he's coasting. But when he's not on, it still may look like on the box score that he's coasting, even though in his head he is not. He is dealing with something. He's dealing with tougher conditions than he normally is. But he's still, going back to the Dodgers playoff series, like, this has been his MO for a long time. I can get guys out using any of the reserves that I store away, whether it's a changeup to Juan Soto, whatever pitch I have to go to, I've got something in the tank.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I think we almost say it to a fault on the pre- and post-game show when it's Jacob deGrom start. How did he do it without his best stuff? How did he do it without his best stuff? You could say that about almost every start, and yet without his best stuff is still better than most people on their A game at all times. And I'm hoping Syndergaard is learning from that. I'm hoping Wheeler continues to flourish, knowing that he's watching him throw his bullpens. It's the preparation that's involved, the throwing two bullpens, where guys were like, you know what, I don't want to throw a bullpen this week. My arm's a little tender. My arm's a little sore. Well, you got to work through that. You got to get over the hump. If you never push yourself to get over that hump, and then all of a sudden the two bullpens get you a little bit sharper, you find yourself not struggling or stressing when you have runners on. And what are you working on in that second bullpen? There's a man on second base. I got to make pitches from the stretch. I got to make that 2-2 backdoor slider so that it's not, you know, an experiment in a game with a major league hitter in there when you make that mistake and it winds up being a two-run home run. I think Jacob deGrom has prepared himself almost as it's game 7 of the World Series since he was a little kid. Mm-hmm. And then when he got to the big league level, it was like, how can I stand out? What is the most important thing? I'm going to be my best reliever as well. I'm not going to let anybody come into my games to clean up the mess, because now Mickey Callaway and Dave Island have the confidence that no matter what the situation is, he's the best option to get himself out of the jam and the Mets.
Opening day as a whole, really every year, feels more special than I go into it thinking it's going to feel. Every year I go in, well, you know, this is our job now, and you're a former player, and I'm really a former fan. And every year, though, you come into work with a smile on your face, you realize how happy this day is making so many people. And DeGrom says after the game how nervous he was. And that just comes off as real, Nelson, because, you know, you can look at it like the jaded guy who says there's 161 more of these. How this game doesn't mean anything more than the 87th game of the year. But that is clearly false in the brain of a player. And Jacob deGrom made that clear in his post-game interview.
Yeah, which is really funny, right? Because a year ago, when it was, you know, who's going to be the opening day starter? It wasn't going to be Matt Harvey. So who was it going to be? Was it going to be Syndergaard? Was it going to be deGrom? And then deGrom, you know, had a little bit of back issue. And so they pushed him back. And like, oh, well, he's not going to be.
That was his bed, right?
Yeah. And
it's a bed. Training.
It was actually Niece's bed. That's a really convoluted story. He was renting Niece's place at the time. So it was, the mattress was too soft. Live and learn, right? So I think he took care of his own mattress now.
Syndergaard gets opening day.
Syndergaard gets opening day, and Jacob has to take the back seat. And you say it, you know, it's one opening day. It's not a big deal. I want to just be there for 30 starts, blah, blah, blah. And then it happens to you. And you're standing on the mound, and you get the flyby. You get the long ceremony beforehand. And even just preparing for that, you don't even know how to prepare. That's an added probably 30 minutes to your routine, because you got to worry about what's going on the field with all, you know, the fanfare. And it's it is a special moment. And I think it got to Jacob a little bit in the beginning. He's talked about how nervous he was. He was didn't even know why, but he was nervous. And he's pitched in, you know, the playoffs and the World Series where they kind of do the same things, but it was opening day and he had just signed that contract and he didn't have his normal routine, you know, where he's normally doing what he does in between the 4 days before he starts again. He all of a sudden he's got to, you know, sit in a room, a locked room with the owner and the GM, and they're not leaving until a deal is done.
Eating taquitos.
I thought Atlanta Braves got in trouble for something like that, didn't they? And all of a sudden Jacob DeGrom is $137 million richer with a big smile on his face. But he does that. Probably didn't get to throw his two bullpens, threw one bullpen in preparation for this. And now he's thinking for a second, man, I've got to live up to this. But I think pure Jacob DeGrom is, there's nothing to live up to. I've been this guy from the beginning. So there's nowhere, there's nothing else I have to be.
Yeah. What a place that must be to be able to be in. I'm thinking, you know, must have been an especially long wait for him yesterday, considering James Brown's introductions is like, born at 1:08 p.m. in Kansas City, Missouri on May 8th, 1989. Please welcome. Like, it was just like that went on for a really long time.
That's led Tom River Little League and OPS back in 1992.
It was a lot of information in those introductions. I wasn't used to that. Opening day for you, is it still special?
It is. It is. And it's special in a different way for me now, because before, when it was me trying to make the team, and I've only made two opening day rosters in my career. I was that 26th man more times than I care to remember. And getting that, you know, after the last workout on the last day, opening day's tomorrow, and you get the, you know, we're going to go with these 25 guys. You're the next guy, you know, to come up. I've had that way too many times. But the two times that I was, Citi Field, I was there, and Mark Anthony sang the national anthem, and I'm talking about, I still get goosebumps just thinking about it. One of my favorite singers of all time, and he just crushed it. Anytime he's in the building, it was a treat, but opening day is always special. I think the other time I got to do it, I was with Houston. We were in Philadelphia, who I was also part of. And then, oh no, it was actually a third time, because I got claimed off waivers in 2010 by Philadelphia, and they were celebrating coming off the World Series. So I was in the World Series parade, you know, and it's like, so it's like, you know, Jimmy Rollins, Ryan Howard, and then we get to the back of the line, and it's me, Raul Ibanez, and a whole bunch of guys who didn't play on the team last year, and it's like, and the rest of the Philadelphia Phillies.
And guys who had nothing to do with it.
But they still gave us a raucous, you know, and we're waving, and we're like, this is awesome. And then, of course, the ring ceremony was reality, because they're getting their rings, and we're on the outside, like, can I look at your ring?
Right.
That's really cool. So those are just special moments where all the hard work pays off, and you get that fanfare, and then you hope that, you know, nothing else lives up to it until you get to the playoffs. So you want to have that feeling again. Now it's 163 days later before you'll hear it again.
Yeah, when you put it that way, it's just, it's easy to understand what made Jacob DeGrom nervous. You make a good point about Syndergaard last year. He didn't get this honor in his Cy Young season. He wasn't the Mets opening day starter, and now he is. Even coming off a year where you can really not get a bigger accolade as a starting pitcher than the Cy Young Award, and he's still nervous, but all of that pomp and circumstance changes a mentality and a mindset, certainly for a starting pitcher. Wow. Well, Nelson, as always, we appreciate you coming on with
My
us.
My pleasure.
This has been a special edition, two episodes in 1 week of the Shane Anything podcast. I believe Andy will be back next week for next week's edition, and I'm sure by then we'll be panicking about nine different things that have gone wrong in less than a week's time. But that's the baseball season.
Yes, sir.
So we're here to panic with you as the season goes along. Our thanks to Nelson Figueroa once again. Thanks for listening, everybody. Please subscribe, rate, and review if you haven't already.